This would allow the command ship to see exactly what I was seeing and doing with the added benefit of stereoscopic video. On this mission we would be traveling in one of the larger saucer aircraft. I would not be a pilot this time, but a crew member. I was to be sitting in another type of comfort chair. My aviator's jumpsuit had wires on the outside of the arms that went all the way down to thin smooth-fitting gloves. I was instructed to place my hands over some indentations in the console in front of me that were shaped like handprints. Then I was to look out the viewing window, and focus the power coming out of my eyes onto the landscape. The idea was to paint the landscape. Several of us were set to practicing this method on 3D video. There would be a drag of color as we moved our eyes. It was similar to what I had experienced on Earth when looking at a single source of light until the retinas in my eyes grew tired. When we moved our eyes, the light would trail behind our vision on the monitor. We wore the helmets and practiced with coaches to create different patterns on a video screen. We made traveling figure sights, or circles that looked like concertina wire, or just broad sweeps across a prepared landscape. It reminded me of our Palmer penmanship training in early grade school, where we had to draw overlapping circles to travel across the paper. We were also given a description of a target and told to look at the target on the monitor. This was an exercise to translate the ideas from the mind and quickly go to the desired location. Then there was a deliberate attempt to divert our attention with noise or flashing lights. We had to learn enough discipline to hold our gaze in one spot without being distracted. With a little more practice, we fixed that. Then we worked on timing the sweeps. We listened as we each received our own instructions and made sure we didn't get confused by the instructions that were given to other teams. In the beginning, it had seemed to be like child's play, but we knew it wasn't. One evening, the final briefing laid out about what the mission consisted of. It was a magnificent plan. My team in a medium-sized saucer aircraft was assigned to position number 3 in an orbit around Mars. There would be 6 teams in their own craft assigned altogether to other positions around the planet Mars. There would be 6 other craft with comparable teams assigned to an orbit around one of Jupiter's moons. It would be the one that had an excess of water, a nearly frozen surface. I learned much later that the name of the moon was Europa. Insert picture of Europa moon. There would be a huge starship located between Mars and Europa. LT would monitor everything going on with the 6 teams and would be the operations center. This ship had the capability of receiving videos from each of the craft when they were in position. This is where the little cameras on my helmet were put into play. They would be able to see exactly what I was seeing. My job was to paint the landscape of Mars with water that would be incoming by a transporter beam from our counterpart team number 3 that was circling Europa. I was to use the power from my eyes to focus on the video monitor that would determine where the water would be placed. We were cautioned not to let our gaze linger too long in one place. The water might dig erosion channels into the surface. The motto was, "Keep it moving." When in doubt, loop the loops. Another concern was the natural rotation of the planet Mars, as well as the rotation of Jupiter's moon, Europa. The incoming water to the surface of Mars had to flow gently so that it would not cause any disruptions to the natural rotation of the planet. The same concerns had to be addressed when picking up the water from Europa. I swallowed hard. It was a big responsibility to the whole solar system. "You can do it," I heard from my earphones. My particular assignment was to help fill that Grand Canyon of Mars, the one that is so much larger than the one we have on Earth. It would contain a lot of water, but the filling of it had to be done carefully. This is why we had practiced using the sweeps trailing the colors for so long. I was informed that this assignment needed an artist's touch, and this was one of the reasons I had been chosen. We were to put in just enough water, not too much, and keep it moving. Only this time, I wouldn't have a brush to use. I would be using my eyes to paint with. The timing of this operation had been chosen to be when the orbit of the planet Mars was closest to Jupiter. Then the orbit of Europa had to be approaching Mars as well. The operation would begin very slowly, with the teams number 1 around Mars and Europa being the first ones called into action. "Europa 1, get ready for pickup. Transporter 1 at the ready. Mars 1 dispenser, prepare to receive water and dispense it, came over the main speakers of our craft. All of the other teams were allowed to watch what was happening on their monitors of Mars for the moment. There was a hum of excitement among all our crew members. "The she blows," came from our own Starcraft's commander. He seemed unaware that he had spoken. The incoming blue transporter beam lighted up the blackness of sea, and water splashed out the end of it like a giant water hose and onto the surface of Mars. Then the water bounced up in a fine spray. It was the first time free water vapor had appeared on Mars for many a year. The spray disappeared almost immediately. It was caught again by the surface gravitation of the planet or evaporated into water vapor that would add to Mars' atmosphere. Either way, the surface of Mars would once again know water. Insert pictures of this many of Skipper's sight. "Rotation holding steady on Mars," came a voice through the speakers. "Rotation holding steady on Europa's," said another voice. "Europa 3, ready for pickup. Transporter 3 at the ready. Mars Team 3, prepare to receive and dispenses." That was our team. My eyes left the main monitor and I looked at the monitor in front of me. The Broad Canyon of Mars was just coming into view. I began a graceful sweep on the monitor with my eyes even before the water began to arrive from the transporter beam. I sensed a current of energy coming out of the monitor in front of me as the water began. From our distance above Mars, the water looked like a gentle rivulet, small stream, as it splashed out of the transporter beam. I kept up the sweeps with my eyes, doing loop-the-loops and sometimes figure eights to spread the water. It spread out nicely, never pooling too long in one place. "Rotation on Mars okay, rotation on Europa okay. Europa Team 5 ready for pickup, Transporter 5 at the ready. Mars 5 ready to receive," as I heard on the many speakers, but I could no longer pay attention to what was happening elsewhere. I had my own work to do. Although I could not always see when the water began coming from the transporter beam, I sensed a change in the planet Mars. There seemed to be a new vitality to the planet. It reminded me of a thirsty pup coming up to a stream for a drink of water and taking huge gulps of water. The planet was being kept in balance with the three teams positioned equally around it, pouring water gently on its surface. Then teams 2, 4 and 6 were added very carefully to the operation. It seemed that Mars was fairly humming with happiness. The Grand Canyon passed out of view as Mars turned in its orbit. I made my visual sweeps wider to spread out the water on the plains. I didn't notice until the Grand Canyon came back in view that the water seemed to be gone from the surface. I assumed that the soil was so very thirsty after so many centuries and millenniums of being without water. More on planet Maldka's inserted headline here. "Once upon a time, the planet Mars had teemed with life, just like the planet Venus, and just like planet Earth. At that time, the residents of the planet Maldk, which had been located in an orbit between Mars and Jupiter, had gone power mad with atomic weapons and other technological weapons of pure energy. Countries on Maldk had threatened one another with atomic bombs. Then they found a new source of power by tapping into Earth's energy at the Great Pyramid. In one fateful moment, they had set off terrible weapons of destruction that went off almost simultaneously. Instead of gaining more power, the residents of Maldk had destroyed their planet. Pieces of the planet went flying in all directions, some hitting Earth, some hitting other planets. One of the results of this mighty explosion was to rob Mars of its atmosphere and water vapor. The destructive blast nearly threw it out of its orbit, in fact it almost left the solar system." This theory was first proposed by Immanuel Velikovsky in his book, Worlds in Collision. The Earth's scientific community scoffed at his theories when they were first published. However, recent explorations of space have shown more and more of his theories can now be considered to be in the realm of possibility. The Maya peoples of Central America had highly accurate tables of lunar eclipses and the dates of the appearance of Venus US the morning star and as the evening star. Their calendar depicted a very dangerous period every 52 years when the orbit 0F Venus came closest to the Earth's orbit. All the fires were put out for a period of 5 days, while the priests observed rituals and people prayed. Mars was called the planet of war because of the electrical sparks that jumped from it to planet Earth when it came too near and threatened to crash into Earth. Insert pictures. If you make a careful reading of the Old Testament, you will discover periods of danger in ancient times, which the prophets and kings were well aware of. These periods of danger happened approximately every 50 years. The visible remains of planet Malk today are concentrated in the Perseid meteor shower that peaks in the summer skies about August 19 each year. There are even those who say that the rings of Saturn may well have been created from atoms gathered up from a planet called Malk. Saturn might be called the savior of our solar system. I had known all this beforehand, and I felt honored to be able to help in the rebuilding of the planet Mars in our solar system. Most of the water on the surface of Mars would be disappearing into the hard soil or would exist as water vapor in an atmosphere newly forming. Even though I knew this, I still would have liked to see more evidence of our efforts to bring water to the surface of Mars. It would have been nice to see a flowing stream in the Great Grand Canyon, but it was not to be. Our efforts to transfer the water went on for many nights. Other crews were brought in to spell us so that the work did not have to stop. Then the ship that was the operations center informed us that the orbits of Mars and Europa were now too far apart for an efficient transfer of the water, even by the transporter beam. We headed back for the mothership happy and tired. I overheard someone say as we were returning to the mothership that the residents of Mars who lived under the surface should now have a goodly supply of water. They had established catch basins especially in preparation for this operation. Their colonies living below the surface should probably be able to expand in the future. More surprises. I wonder who they might be, but I haven't been able to explore that idea. I will leave that to someone else. In the middle of the year 2000, the scientists of NASA have announced that, much to their surprise, there is evidence of recent water on the surface of Mars. It was first observed as early as 1994 but was not announced to the public. Some erosion such as would be expected from running water has also been seen by satellite. Oops. Chapter 20: The Galaxy Diplomats Meeting, and they talked on other things, on the ecological, man-made catastrophes now emerging on our planet. One evening I felt a huge swoop of energy. I found that I had been summoned up to the mothership. This was something new. I found myself in a huge circular auditorium that I had not known was there. I wasn't alone either. There were a lot of Earthlings there, maybe 1,000 or 2,000 of them. It was easy to identify the beings that were Earthlings. They were the ones standing around in the auditorium looking puzzled, and wondering how they got there. I saw one or two people from my own city down on Earth. I recognized my friend, Starcatcher, nearby and went over to talk to him. "What's going on?" I asked. "I don't know. I just got here myself," he said, looking around. Then there was also a woman whom I knew as a metaphysical teacher from my own city. She was standing in a long white robe on the opposite side of the auditorium. There were a number of people present from the classes I had attended up on this mothership too. I had never been in this particular auditorium. It curved around in a complete circle with graduated rows that rose up to the top. It had central aisles for easy access. It was laid out somewhat like an opera house on Earth. Down in flout was a circular raised platform that had a bug table with a large number of chairs. I wondered who was going to appear. I didn't have long to wait. There were some tall beings, both men and women, wearing some sort of diplomatic robes, who came in. Their robes were topped with red caplets. They looked very stern. They were followed by other diplomats who wore robes with green caplets. Soon Edros and four other Pleiadians came in from another entrance and came up the side, two men and two women. They were wearing long diplomatic robes, too. Their robes had bright turquoise-colored caplets. They filed in down below and took up positions by the chairs. Then more beings came in. They were very tall and dignified. They appeared to be ageless. They wore capulets of yellow. Next came four beings wearing orange capulets. They were followed by other representatives, wearing purple capulets, men and women equally balanced. I glanced over at the beings wearing red capulets. Somehow they made me nervous, though I didn't know why. When all of the beings had filed in and were seated, Adros rose, stepped forward and addressed all of us in the audience. All of you have been brought here from your homes on various places of Earth to observe this meeting of diplomats from other planets in your solar system. Some of our friends here are from other galaxies as well, from even beyond the Milky Way. We meet on a regular basis to monitor the progress of mankind on the Earth. However, this is the first time that this particular group of humanity from the Earth has been invited to observe our meetings. First, let me introduce the representatives from Saturn. They are the lawgivers of your solar system. He waved his hand toward the group in the middle of the table. They bowed their heads in acknowledgement. I was astounded. They looked very serious. In fact, they looked just like judges would appear. They wore capillets of a dark, almost navy blue. Adros continued, the visitors who have come the longest distance, actually a number of light years away, are our friends here wearing the red capillets. They are from a galaxy far, far away. I could not catch the name of their galaxy, but I know that it was well beyond our own Milky Way. This is the first time they have visited with us. They have wanted to come to observe how the development of humanity on Earth has progressed. We welcome them. Their leader, wearing a bright red capillet and was almost as tall as Adros. He bowed, somewhat haughtily. Then all of the representatives sat down. We knew this was serious business. Those of us from Earth in the audience gave our undivided attention. May we begin the reports from the committee about the health of the Earth itself, said Adros. One of Adros' own people came in from the side to a podium on a circular stage and began the briefing. He wore a full-length robe embroidered at the bottom with turquoise, but he had no colored capillet. There have been many changes on Earth as the years have gone by, but none so much as the last 100 years. Even the last 50 years have seen these changes speeding up, as what has been called civilization on Earth has increased. Their scientists have called it technology, and it has gained much momentum. Inventions have appeared in many places on the Earth. Sometimes this has been because we as Pleiadians have sent down inspiration to the creative inventors of the Earth. It was hoped that they could make life easier to bear for all of humanity. We have been disappointed to find that some of their finest inventions have been grabbed up by world governments. They have hidden them away and they have called them secret. Far too often these wonderful inventions have been diverted to the military organizations within these government and changed to be used as weapons of destruction instead of easing the burdens of humanity. We have repeatedly sent down information about free energy, but this information has been hoarded or stifled. In addition, there has been a rush to gather up many of the virgin resources of the Earth, minerals deep within the Earth. Some of these resources have lain undisturbed since the last ice age that covered the Earth. Lain the past, the simple people of Earth were just concerned that they had enough food, clothing and shelter for their families. However, in the last 100 years on Earth, the Industrial Revolution roared into gear in most parts of the world. The primary idea of some of the leaders of humanity has just been to make a quick profit. Some people have become very wealthy. In the process, they have not always recognized the impact of what they have been doing. The first resource of the Earth, which they have taken, has been the forests. Some of these forests have stood for thousands of years, renewing themselves and providing an ecological balance in nature. Humanity, needing oxygen, breathed in air and breathed out carbon dioxide. The forests breathed in the carbon dioxide and released oxygen to the air again. Instead of going in and harvesting only the most mature of the trees and letting the sun in so that the smaller trees could grow in their place, mankind has followed a policy of clear-cutting these forests in many cases. It was simply easier to get the trees out by cutting them all down. There was no thought of the effect it had on the landscape of the future. A picture flashed up on the screen of a hill that was completely denuded of trees. Little else grew there. The lull seemed to cry out in pain that it was bare and unprotected from the rays of the sun and the pounding effects of rain. However, as a secondary benefit, many people moved into these lands and set up farms. The land was rich in the nutrients that the forest and its cooperative force of insects and microbial helpers had set up in the forest litter. The insects and microbes provided a mutual benefit to the forest. At the beginning, these little plots of land grew wonderful crops, that is, for 2 or 3 years. Unfortunately, these farmers were not knowledgeable in how to replenish this forest soil they had been using. This had the effect of taking money out of the bank of nutrients in the former forest land, nutrients that had taken a long time for the forest to gather up. Back during the times of Atlantis, the scientists on the Earth knew how to replenish the nutrients of such soils so that the farmer could continue to farm his land but still coexist with the forest. The farmer took only what he needed and filled his garden and farm waste back into the soil. The birds sang as seeds germinated, and live waters from winding streams and rivers nourished the land. Regarding water, there have been streams and rivers, which curved naturally and gracefully so that the water rolled over rocks and sandbars. This splashing activity of the water created vortexes in the water that brought a life back into the water. It helped in the renewing the magnetic and electrical energies from the earth. Unfortunately, mankind has mistakenly tried to straighten out these rivers so there could be an increase in traffic of ships and boats on the rivers. In doing so, the water has lost the power to nourish the land. It has lost its power to bring life back to the land. The rivers have had to endure insurmountable pollution being dumped into them. Only when the evidence of fish dying in these rivers could not be ignored did mankind try to do something about this pollution. The new technology had poured its poisonous waste into the rivers. There are many places now where rivers and streams can truly be called dead. This has been accelerated by the runoff of agricultural fertilizers and pesticides for many years that also put the water out of balance. The excess fertilizer flowed into the great rivers and eventually readied the oceans. There it has provided unlimited nourishment for persons' red algae. We have watched all of these events very sadly. The water can no longer bring life to the land. The briefer paused and looked around the room. Shock was registered on most of the faces. Mankind has been unaware of the various frequencies which occur in nature. For example, the songs of birds in the springtime have also contributed to the energies of growth. They actually help some seeds to germinate. Many birds have been lost to the countryside because of pesticides that were intended to kill insects that ate crops. No one thought about the fact that the birds would then eat those poisoned insects. The poison affected them as well. Many birds died as a result. One writer on the Earth, Rachel Carson, told of the year after pesticide use began, that robins, bird, were dying all over, lying on their backs on lawns and quivering until death overtook them. So now, despite the pesticide use, the insect population grew because they had fewer natural predators. The story was repeated in the wanton destruction of bats in the American Southwest, which could eat tons of insects in a single night. Would that humanity could only understand. When chemical fertilizers and pesticides became so easily available, many people forgot about the way that trees and water and birds and insects keep everything in nature balanced. Because of this, fish are dying or absent from many rivers on the earth now. After several years of farming land, which had been newly opened by deforestation, the bank of nutrients went dry. The farmers simply moved on to other areas of forest and repeated the process. It became known as slash and burn style agriculture that is the norm in many tropical countries. This became so common that the people living in and around the forests simply thought of it as the normal way to farm. Of course, then the forests retreated in front of the farmers. Slowly at first, then much faster in recent years, as the demands for food for an increased population grew. Meanwhile, the gradual loss of the forests had a degrading effect on the available oxygen throughout the whole planet. The leaves of the trees take the carbon dioxide humanity breathes out and they recycle it, putting out life-giving oxygen back into the atmosphere. This balancing capability of the forests is becoming severely hampered because there are few total forests all over the earth to do this work, and yet there are more and more people all over the earth. Humanity is having problems getting enough oxygen now. There are more lung diseases among people all over the earth, due simply to the fact that there is less oxygen in the air now than was available even 100 years ago. This is unfortunate, because nature, left to its own devices, has a perfect balance, the trees taking carbon dioxide in and giving oxygen out. Plants that can take the rotted organic matter from the forest litter or from human waste, have in many cases been overwhelmed. There is more waste to be processed by plants and trees, but fewer trees and plants to do the job. Here the speaker paused and spoke slowly and carefully. This encroachment has proceeded especially fast in the tropical parts of the earth. Those who cut down the hardwood trees and sold them to the rest of the world for flue furniture saw money flow into the banking systems of their countries. They did not see and did not care about the damage to the forest ecosystem. These were assets of nature. They were simply considered to be free. The replacement of the trees did not go through their monetary system as hard cash. For all practical purposes, the benefits that the forests provided to the earth were ignored, and came out as a zero in cash flow. Thus the losses to the earth's healthy air system was not even an item to be considered. Their grandchildren may have breathing problems, but most of humanity doesn't get the connection. There was a visible stir in the audience. Sometime soon after one of the great wars of Earth came to a close in the year on Earth, which is called 1945, the manufacturers who had created the ammunition for this war, now had no buyers for their wares. What to do? They went into their chemistry labs, tinkered with the formula a little bit, and soon there appeared on the scene something that had never appeared before. It seemed like magic, pelleted fertilizer. It contained three basic ingredients: nitrogen, which caused plants to grow quickly, phosphorus, called K, and potassium. Farmers were told that to assist their different crops, all they had to do was change the proportions for each of list these three ingredients. It was true, the plants grew twice as tall and the crops multiplied. What was ignored is that there are trace minerals that plants also need, such as selenium, zinc, copper, and host of other minerals. In the forced growth of the crops, there was a sudden depletion of these trace minerals in the soil. At the same time, the farmers began to discontinue putting their organic material, which had contained some of these minerals, back into the soil. Composting and the use of animal manure went out of favor. Like an athlete whose abilities had been pumped up by extra sources of energy, the land and the plants began to grow quickly, but they were also heading towards exhaustion. The solution was to pour on more fertilizer. This costs money, of course, so the cost per acre to raise a crop began to rise. Bankers enjoyed the newfound wealth, which circulated through their banking systems from lending money to farmers and receiving the loan paybacks with generous interest for the bankers. There was a look of shock on the faces of the delegation wearing red capillets, and they shook their heads. The Pleiadian doing the briefing about the earth finally sat down. Another person stood up to talk about energy. Oil, the next resource, which has been feverishly taken from the earth, has been oil. This is the raw petroleum, which is processed into dozens of products the world has decided it needs. Certainly oil is useful, but even the experts are being forced to recognize that there is a limited quantity of oil, which may run out during the lifetimes of some people hearing this briefing. One thing that has never been considered, is that this oil is the lubricant for the tectonic plates of the earth itself. Now I ask you, what happens when you no longer have the needed lubricants for your joints? You get creaky and has hard to move. Your joints even pop now and then. Mother Earth has reacted same way. This is but one of the contributory factors in the increasing numbers of violent earthquakes all over the earth. Mankind is facing a disaster by having become so dependent on oil, just one source of energy. This sets up everyone on Earth for power plays, some of which have already been seen in the politics all over the earth for the control of oil, which is in great reservoirs in the Middle East. Water is the most necessary substance on the earth, but in many ways is the most misunderstood. The twofold pressures of increased population and its demands for water and increased industrial use of water are on a collision course. When water is forced through all the processes of a modern technologically advanced industrial plant, it is often not fit for drinking afterwards. Nature created winding rivers to purify water and to energize it as well. Many of these rivers have been artificially straightened. At present there is an ever-increasing amount of dead water on the planet. While the distillation of water may allow the removal of most of the contaminants, it cannot bring the life back into water.